The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on September 15, 2024. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning, everybody. Good to see you. Today I thought I would talk about, I was thinking of the title, No Mystery, but I already gave a talk. Well, that was over 20 years ago now, but here, with that title. Actually, it ended up becoming one of the chapters in my book, Buddhism Is Not What You Think. Really, the title for that should be Buddhism Is Not About What You Think. It's not about thinking. But since I already had a title, No Mystery, I don't know, maybe I could call this No Mystery Redux or something. I don't know. No, maybe not mystery. That might still not. Yes, so just bring it back and look at it again. But I will be touching on that topic of no mystery. I'll be saying other things than I did 20-something years ago. Though I went back and looked at that, and it isn't that I'm going to correct what I did before. I think that was perfectly fine, what I offered you before. But there are many, many things that can be said about this topic. And I think perhaps what kind of triggered it for me this week was on Wednesday evening, I got a call from my sister-in-law, my brother's wife, and my brother, Morris, was placed in hospice at a nursing home, and that he won't be returning to their house again. And this was new. Well, actually, we knew his health had been deteriorating for some time and fairly quickly recently. And so Ann and I went down there a couple weeks ago, and we had a very nice visit. It was good to see him and his family. His grandson was there and one of his children who live quite a ways from here. So it was good to see them, but it was good to have a nice long visit with my brother. And then, so the other night, when I get the call, it wasn't really too surprising that he was moved to hospice. It somehow did seem kind of abrupt, but there it was. And when I came down and I told that to Ann, and I remember I just sort of teared up a little bit. He's a guy I've known longer now than anyone in my whole life. He's about 2.5 years older than me. So as far back as I can remember, there was my brother. He was my younger of my two brothers. We had another brother, Dale, who was, he was almost 12 years older than me, about 9.5 years older than my brother Morris. But I just wanted to say a little bit about this, because there's so many things that could be said. And not about my brother, I mean, because we all experience this with loved ones, either suddenly or maybe over a long period of time, but we see this coming and we know. None of us will survive this bodily. It's inevitable. Sometimes it can come sooner or later. Norm, I didn't check this with you, but he just had a little great-granddaughter. I hope it's okay, Norm, if I mention this, but great-granddaughter just born a little over a month ago, I think. No, well, we have a card for her here on the altar. Born in August, what, 20-something, I forget. And then just died recently. She lived about 3 weeks. Now, my brother, he's 81, and that seems pretty good, I guess, for us. Though some people live quite a bit longer than that, others die much shorter than that, as in the case of Norm's great-granddaughter. And it's very sad, too, when we see that. And when things like this happen, you know, we might want to ask, well, just, you know, what is it? I felt sad too. Like I said, I kind of teared up. Even though I'm speaking of it, my brother being in hospice now. I can feel my throat quivering there a little bit. But it isn't that this is a mystery to me. I'm very acquainted with death. My father died suddenly when I was 6 years old. Morris was 8 and a half. Our oldest brother was about to graduate from high school. He was 17. And I was about to turn 18. You know, so I was introduced to that in a very sudden and unexpected way as a little child. And since then, I remember when I was in fifth grade, a very dear cousin of mine, my brother Morris, he was about our age and about between us somewhere there. And he had been killed in a car accident. And that was a shocker too. And there too at the funeral, there were so many people there. It was just a boy who was killed. Very close to my brother and I. We used to, whenever we got together as a family, we used to play with him a lot. And, my grandfather's passing, I remember that quite well. And now I'm saying things, you've experienced all of this yourself. So what I want to say here is be kind of universal. Not my particular story. But I'm just want to let you know that I've experienced this in many ways. Well, I myself, at 32, was diagnosed with cancer, wasn't expected to live very long, only a few months actually, at first. I got that from a doctor who I pressed to tell me what am I dealing with. But that was, what, 47, 48 years ago? You never know. But the threat of that coming back for the next 10 years or so was always kind of looming there. In the meantime, losing other loved ones. My wife, Jean, many of you knew her. She passed away 14 years ago now, just last week. So death and losing ones close to it, and also I've had more bouts with cancer, different kinds. I've had prostate cancer, lung cancer. They've removed a portion of my lung, and now I'm dealing with another cancer. I'll be starting chemo next week. So all of this is very familiar to me. I've been here many times now. I'm 78, soon to be 79. So I'm just speaking from someone who's been smacked with this quite a few times, but we all have. The longer we live, the more. As we get older too, many of our contemporaries begin to lose them. Paul Courtney just recently, a very dear fellow for many of us. So there it is. But it can leave us wondering, well, something that's like mystery in our mind. What is this? Where do we go? Do we go anywhere? Do we come back? And we have all kinds of questions like this. And we might latch on to a particular view, a particular belief. And maybe it'd be comforting. Yes, if you can really take hold of something there, it probably would feel very comforting. And I don't mean to say to let go if you do rely on something or another for this. But it is this matter of mystery, of not knowing, that is really so troubling for us. Even when we might feel like, oh, I have my belief, I yes, but how secure is that? That's not really the same as knowing with assurance, you know, with certitude. And it might be very comforting and helpful. But it's that element of mystery about it. We don't know. We don't even know what it is exactly. Or so we think. I would argue with this that we don't. We do know. I think we do know. And there's no mystery. But anything we take hold of here leaves us with mystery. I remember some years ago, there was a, I understood this by the time I heard this program, but it was, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And it was right after I got back from Japan, and I spent that first winter out in the woods, you know, cabin with no electricity and and stuff like that. But once in a while, I could catch this on the radio. I had radio operated with batteries. I could only run it so long, though, before I had to turn it off. And I didn't listen to the whole series or anything, but I do remember hearing about this story many times since. And there's, maybe you know the story, and there's this computer, they had programmed it to dig into this question. Something like, what is the secret of life, the universe, and everything? That in itself is almost, well, it is a joke, sort of. You're going to look for the secret of life, the universe, and everything? And eventually, I never listened to this thing to the end, but I guess at the end of this series, finally the computer kicks out the answer. And the answer, maybe many of you know, to what is the secret of life, the universe, and everything, this deep mystery of it all. And the computer says 42. And and of course, it was a comedy show, by the way, I should say, so there was a lot of jokes and humor in there. But anyway, so it says 42. And of course, and they say, 42? Kind of an answer is that. Is 42 what? They ask. And the computer says, well, you didn't ask me that. But the reason I'm bringing this up, a little levity here might be helpful, but more than that, to the point here. When they ask, 42 what? And now the computer has a, well, it's stumped again. I got to go back and start digging again. That task will not end. That computer is still searching, if there is such a thing as that. It's when you put in that what there. Katagiri Roshi, my teacher, he said that Zen is, here it is, what is it? This, and I've looked at this many times since. There's so many things that can come. I've lectured on this many times too. But there's so much right there. Here it is. People want to know that. Well, here, what is? What do you mean, it? Here it is. Then the question, what is it? And then, of course, we want to know, what is it? And then maybe we try to come up with answers. Well, is it this or is it that? And we, maybe not objects or something like that, but is it, you know, here it is. What is it? Love or knowledge? Or we can get into things that we might say or think of as more perhaps abstract. But what that question is there for, Katagiri Roshi never said this, pointed it out exactly, and I won't say exactly either, but if you look at those two questions, well, here it is, and I mean, oh, so we're looking for something here, so it, we might speculate or wonder what is it? The secret of life, the universe, and everything. But what? What is it? So that question, you know, here it is, well, the statement, here it is, and then the question right next to it, what is it? Probably, unless we wake up, will drive us to feeling like maybe if we don't just pass out, well, this is a ridiculous thing. I don't even want to deal with this. Yeah, we can do that. We can just dismiss it. What other choice do we have? Well, then to take the question seriously, start looking for an answer. Because this is what we want. Pretty much about everything about life. We want an answer. We want to know what is going on here. And things happen. Things come and go. And loved ones come and go. I came some time ago, and now I'm going to go at some point in the future. My brother, known him all these years, my dear brother, shared so much with him, especially in our youth, our childhood. And now he's going to go. Well, of course, I'm going to go too. I could even beat him on the way out. So no guarantees here, anything, about anything. But we want to know what is happening. Where do we go? Where did I come from? And what am I now? Of course, I have a name, but what does that mean? Other people have this name too. Even my first and last names are shared. I've met other Steve Higgins in my life, let alone all kinds of Steves, including the guy who spoke to us just before I came in. But what does that even mean? It doesn't, you know, it's a name, so we can refer to something quickly and easily, but it doesn't explain anything. It's just sort of a useful label, tree or cup or whatever it might be. So it helps us to communicate, and even more abstract things like love or hate or injustice. And these things are helpful for us. And they do, as we use these terms of all kinds, everywhere, for many things, to describe things. Oh, I got a pain in my knee, or whatever. It's very helpful, very useful, in many ways. But it never gives us an answer. Answers that question, well, what is it? Oh, I see, yeah, well, it's this or that. Yeah, that's its function. It seems to help with that, or it could bring this on, or something. It's caught up there in cause and effect. But what is it? And why is it even here? Why is anything here? Is anything really here? We're left with mystery. And no matter where we go with this, we're left with mystery. We're not stuck here, by the way, because I'm going to dispel this matter of mystery. I'm going to point the way. I don't know if I'll dispel it for you necessarily, but I'm going to point out where our problem is here. We make a conceptual mistake. We all do. Until we wake up, even then we can continue going, but at least once we see the mistake, we don't have to keep falling back into it. And by the way, that's what this teaching is about, this practice is about, is to wake up to this. What I'm going to try to point out for you here. Because I can't actually say, that's just another thing. If I say something, well, and there we go. And of course, that's the sort of thing we look for. Can't you tell me? Yes, I can say things, and then, oh, good, and then we'll grab onto that. But that doesn't really help. And we know that because we've gone through this enough times in life, if we've been around a while, that in the end, you're not going to get the answer, the secret to life, the universe, and everything. And we could even say something like 42. That's kind of interesting. Because 42, okay, all right. Sort of seems like, is that an answer? But of course, it's immediately, 42 what? Well, you didn't say that. But that's always it. We want to put something there. We think we have to put something there that will be the answer, the key to the secret, to unlock the secret of life, the universe, and everything. We deeply believe this to the point where we don't walk around thinking, well, I have this belief. You know, no, we don't even realize that. We believe this in the same way that we breathe or do so many things that we don't think about, but there it is. And of course, it's vital too, because if we stop breathing, we wouldn't last too long. But of course, that's even pretty difficult to do if you've ever tried to hold your breath. It's pretty hard to stop. Though the breath will stop, we say, we think, eventually. But all the while, we can go in all directions from here and jump in at new places altogether and start a different kind of conversation, all of that. But all the while, we are living here with the deep, unquestioned assumption that there's something here. If I don't have an idea for the something that is here, I want to know what it is. And so I'm looking for something I can put there to explain what this little corner of the universe, if even that. We're now questioning, I've mentioned this before, I won't get into this at all, but just to show how basic this can go, recently, scientists, mathematicians are finding objects now that we used to think that even things like space and time are, we can maybe get rid of everything else, but at least there's space and there's time. Apparently not. They've now have uncovered other structures that seem to be the basis for space and time. Maybe not together or separately, I don't know. There are a number of these things. So are these the foundational things? No, they aren't. And we can know that, we can see that. We ought to be suspecting that now. We used to, at least with the material world, we brought it down to the various elements and the different atoms that make them, and the different parts of the atoms, you know, the electrons and protons and neutrons, and we get down the quarks and keep going down and down and down and down. Well, at least there's space and there's time, and these also seem to be, if you have anything there at all in your mind, at all, about love or about myself or that person over there, or the person, my loved one who's about to die, or those that have died, by myself. You know, if you have any notions, you create any notions about this at all, you will be perplexed. You will be wrapping this mystery all about you. Close at hand, yeah, we have things we can grip and tie and hang on to, and they might make us. But the deep backdrop of everything that surrounds you, what can I say, both in space and time, but also mentally and in our beliefs and our worldview and all of this, leaves us with deep mystery. And it seems like there's no way out of it. There is, and I've already given it to you in this talk right now, but I'll draw your attention to it closer. And I've done this many times, drawing your attention to this, but it gets missed because it seems, when I say it, it'll seem like nothing at all. Oh, or sometimes it might be, I don't know what you mean by that. So it's nothing difficult at all, but it is that we think, we don't realize we think, but this is not just thinking, this is actual belief. A belief is a thought that we think is true, that's holding something that is true or real. And we think if such and such is true or real, you know, that there's a cup on this table next to me here. Well, that's true, yeah. The awakened would say, yeah, it's a relative truth, it's a relational truth, it's a conceptual truth. Ultimately, that's what we have. You go looking for that as a scientist, you end up, even the space and time that it seems to need and occupy, it doesn't even seem to be there now. Or we can look at it in so many other ways as well. Everything is of this nature. But it is simply because you put something. I say you put something. You doesn't even refer to anything that you're ever going to get hold of. I use the word you or the word me or I because I'm speaking English, and it's pretty hard to get very far without using such terms. With the understanding that I'm speaking out of with this, I have no idea what these terms refer to. None. Or enlightenment, or about waking up. What is that? I don't have any ideas about that. Well, then you should just give up then and quit? Well, no, you can't do that. This is all ongoing. So then, however you want to put it, because we're searching for something to put there. I can say, I know, I've learned this long ago, probably about 48 years ago, I think, when suddenly I realized that if you're putting anything there at all, now there's the mystery, the strangeness, the inability to explain anything, including mind and consciousness. We're still trying to figure out what's consciousness made of. What creates consciousness? Who says consciousness is created? Show me that, where consciousness comes into existence. Existence itself, what the heck is that? If you look carefully, I point this out sometimes, it sort of kind of slides right by. But for existence, the assumption you have in your mind when we speak of something like existence is that we're talking about something that's persisting. The Buddha points this out to us 2,500 years ago. There isn't anything that's persisting. There's nothing enduring whatsoever. So then there's nothing, when you say nothing enduring, there's no thing, idea, thought, feeling, that's persisting. And remaining itself from moment to moment. The moment something changes, well, then it's no longer itself. There's no permanent, persisting selfhood of any kind. The Buddha saw this, realized this, and realized that this is the nature of reality. It is thus, just as like that. That he could even say something about it is remarkable. And that the ability through language or whatever can be handed down so many centuries later and still being pointed out. And all along the way, people wake up to this. You can see the nature of what's taking place here. And there's no mystery about it. Only if you try to take hold of a piece of it, you put a word to it, you get an idea, a thought, a belief again is a thought or that you think is true, you believe is true. But the moment there's anything there at all, now we have mystery. We don't understand what's behind it all. And now it sounds like because we've always believed in something, we're always looking for, always assume that there's some substance here, that it sounds like I'm saying then that there's nothing. Well, that's obviously not the case. This isn't nothing. I've said this, I've pointed this out many times. this is not nothing. People want, what do you mean this? You want me to name something? You can't come up with anything that isn't a thing or a this or. But at the moment you believe that thing that appears here now is real and persisting, now we have mystery. We have all these questions. And then we identify with it, and I think, well, I'm one of these entities too, or something. Really? So I'm the little boy that lost his father at the age of 6. But that happened to you. But we keep trying to explain, keep putting things there. In the end, there's nothing to say about it. We can see all of that, realize that. But we don't have to do it by attributing substance to any bit of it. The moment we do, now we don't understand. We don't understand movement and change and time and the arena in which all of this is taking place, you know, space and all of that. It is just simply a matter of seeing this. And so when it comes to my brother, my dear brother, he and I, we were close in age, as opposed to our older brother, who was quite a bit older than us. He always seemed like an adult to me. Whereas my brother, he's about the age of Norm, so he's just a couple of years older than me, but we were close enough in age, and so I could relate to him as another kid, you know. But not the case with my older brother. But what am I doing with this now? Well, of course, I've known. I could say I've known all our lives. He's going to die someday. You know, maybe I'd die before him, maybe not. That's still the case. But see, if my brother, if I'm somebody here, now I have a brother, yes, I have a brother, one that's still alive. Yes, this is true, small t truth, I'll give that. I love him very much. And when he goes, if he precedes me in death, I'll be very sad. I'll probably shed a lot more than another tear. I will miss him. He lives in Rochester, Minnesota. He's with the Mayo Clinic, and that's his doctors, and you know, so he's got good care. But he's a distance from me. I don't see him that often. Probably going to go see him again pretty soon, though. But he's very dear to me. And we went different ways in life. He became a Lutheran minister. Retired now. His daughter is a Lutheran minister. After our father died, my mother really got very involved with the church and that sort of thing. So we had a very strict Christian upbringing. He didn't quite follow the path that we were raised in originally, but he went in that direction. I was a bit of a mystery, I guess, to everybody, because I didn't, by the time I was an adult, didn't seem to have much direction for a long time, but I was internally wanting to get to the bottom of all of this. So anyway, we went on different paths. I understand him pretty well. We were raised in a similar way. I understand all of that. And I'm fine with that. I have no desire, never have had any desire to try to convert him. Convert him to what? To what I'm just speaking of? I'm not offering a belief here. So I don't have any, so that doesn't trouble us. He and his daughter in particular, I think they still want to maybe save me or something, but over time, he didn't have much respect for what I was doing for a long time. No, he seems to respect me to some degree. And that's fine. But whether or not he remains indifferent to me even up till now, it wouldn't change anything that I feel here with him. I'm not troubled by it. I have no thoughts of where he's going to go. He might have beliefs about that. I haven't talked with him on things like that for a long time, but I know his daughter certainly does, and his wife. But what I would tell him is maybe on the order of what I've been trying to point out this morning, though it'd be very difficult for them to even get a sense of what I'm even talking about, let alone to see if they can venture into looking at their own minds. I remember our mother, she used to say that she had, and through her religious views and that, after she had really gotten into that, she was a pianist at the church, an organist eventually, at her church and all this sort of thing. So it was very much the way I was brought up with all that. Morris and I used to sing a lot in various places. Our mother would bring us around to sing and stuff. So I understand them pretty well. They have very poor understanding of Steve. You know, why did he, where is he? I mean, what did he, he's a Buddhist. I mean, they don't understand any of this. They've never heard me speak or read any, I doubt they've read much in what I have published, but that's all fine. I don't expect anything from them. I know that they love me. I can tell this, and they're concerned about me. And that's all very sweet and nice, and I appreciate that. But I don't have any need for that necessarily, other than just a human touch, the human feeling. These are all wonderful things. So that can still be there. I'm not going to, at the last minute here, try to save my brother to help him wake up or whatever. We've had our encounters where I've pointed out things in the course of our lives, interlaced with each other all these years. But he's at peace, and I think he really is. He probably can really hang on to that belief, perhaps. I don't know. But I have no desire to disturb that. I'm not worried about him. I'm not worried about my mother, who passed away some years ago now, or my older brother. He was an atheist, our oldest brother. And my two brothers, they used to go at it a bit. But I got along with both of them, really. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that it's possible to just take it easy, to slow down. If you're really hanging on to some thought or view about another person that they must do this, or I want to save them from that, or about yourself, or where I must go, and all of this, you don't need to do that. I didn't set out to create Dharma Field, really. It all kind of started after my teacher died and people started showing up at my house. And one thing led to another and evolved into what we have now here, which has evolved itself over the time that we've been here at Dharma Field. What I'm trying to say is that we don't have to be driven to do this, or to be so result-oriented and all that. You want to bring about certain kind of... Look at what's going on with the elections right now, the presidential election this year. And how much is behind that? Really on both sides, but... One side, I'll tell you, this is what we can look for, though, in terms of our actions and that, without trying to bring about any particular result. But we can be open to the whole. It's very healthy-minded now. Very healthy activities. Or we can be very close to that and working toward what I want and what I want for my buddies who are in this with me and the heck, whatever, you know. We can go that way, too. To me, it looks like this is very, very clear with this particular election coming up. And it's pretty obvious which one is the more healthy-minded, the more tolerant, maybe the slower to act or react. And you want to drive certain programs and things, yeah, that would be good. Yeah, and that's all very good. We can be watching for that. It's kind of like when we started Dharma Field here, and it wasn't just me, but if it wasn't for other people coming around, I myself couldn't have done this. So in the interactions of all the things that are going on in this world at various levels, on national level or in our personal lives or anywhere in between here, we can take it easy, not try to drive home a particular point, because that particular point, whatever it is a thing there that can be grasped. You're probably holding it now, or maybe it seems to be gripping you. Something like that. And now, this is not karma. Any action that's coming from this is karma. It's going to lead to pain and entanglements and sorrow and the lack of understanding, kind of obscuring what is otherwise a very clear view of what is really taking place here. That's why I say that we truly know this, because this is what you see, is this reality is just thus. It's no particular thing. It's not going any particular way. It's just simply thus, this unfolding. And it's showing us all these different aspects. This is consciousness, is the bringing up of this and that point, and that this is good and that's bad. And then we go chasing after those. Yeah, that's the part that's not necessary. Still, we have to interact in this world. Okay, then keep your eye on the whole. What's open for all of us. And not benefiting the few here or something. Just let that be your compass. I talk about this in my book, Buddhism Plain and Simple. I talk about leaning of mind. Where you're inclined to go this way, you're inclined to be very careful of that. The Buddha pointed this out, that the Buddhas, the awakened ones, they don't act out of this, our ordinary thing. What I want, what I have to bring this about, I have to do. Be very careful there. Just keep your eye on the whole, your mind on the whole. And now in the immediacy of where you are, yeah, you have to act, sure. Not a matter of just sitting on our hands all day. But we have some compass here, and it's not a compass exactly because it's not pointing in any particular direction. But it'll sort of tell us what would be the healthier way to go. Or in the case of, like, say this, I always vote, you know, when it comes up. But this is what I'm looking for. I don't identify with any particular party, but I'm like just looking at the landscape here. And we have to act. Yeah, even if we, say, choose not to vote, say, in that particular example, that's still acting. So if our mind is on the whole, you will see this, you will realize it's still acting. So now what do you do? Well, you can just kind of get acquainted with the leanings of your own mind. And see if you can kind of back off from that. With this is the understanding is in that, the demystification of it all, you know, is in that. And finally seeing how this is all unfolding here and how you can best act. And at least in terms of having a good understanding of what is taking place, and also not being too tossed away by the slings and arrows and pains and hurricanes of life. Okay, well, I think I probably pointed out everything I wanted to say this morning, so I don't know. Do you have any questions about anything here?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is energy?
What is energy? Yeah, good question. Yeah, a physicist will tell you that energy is what does work. It moves things about, yeah. But, what is energy? Yeah, good question. Did you want me to answer it? Yeah. Well, there's nothing to say. In the end, there's really nothing to say about anything, actually, but this is not nothing. And so we will divide it in various ways, and we can say that, well, this aspect of it, this is energy. And energy involves, you know, moving of various things. Of course, that's in physics. But also, we go way down the road, and we're into very complicated things, you know, living organisms and then human beings, even. And, oh, doesn't she have a lot of energy? And we'll use it in terms like that, yeah. Yeah, so we're talking about something, but what exactly are we talking about? I have nothing to say, really. Yeah.
Something interesting about it is we are created from the strong.
Yes.
So that opens things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That does seem to be, you know, where we are, you know, with all of this in many ways. Like, I can give you a real quick mystery. Like, we can say, well, what is time? Of course, now they're saying, well, time isn't even a fundamental thing, it's made of other things. Yeah, okay. But St. Augustine, when somebody would ask him about time, and he said, I know what it is until you ask me. And if you look at that, it was just, what are you going to say about time? I've looked at this for decades. So But time, or energy, you could put it there too, but it's in this world of this and that, the world of, that seems to be, we could say, created by consciousness, but the world of objects of this and that, of coming and going, here and there, and you and me, and you know, all sorts of things, various kinds of feelings and thoughts and colors and sounds and whatever. And in that world now, there also seems, as soon as you, oh, by the way, I could have said this too, as soon as you have something there now, now you've got time. You might have space, but you certainly have time. Because it seems that you have something in relation to something else. And this seems very clear. And now, and one of the things that's in relation to other things is involves time. Like, how long does it take to get there? Or, you know, when did you see that? Or, you know, but in many different ways, we can bring time into the picture now. And so Augustine says, you know, he knows how to work with time, you know. And everything's fine until you ask him, well, what is it? I could say, no. Because there's this other aspect that we don't know. We do have a word for it. It's called now. And we could say that, well, time then seems to belong to this world of this and that, various things, things I can think about or grasp or relate to in various ways. Because they seem to be objects of various kinds, mental or even physical. You know, they're aging, you know, things like this. But there's this other aspect, and it is there as surely as we can find now. But if you look at now, it's not like time. Time seems to be kind of sandwiched between the future and the past. But the future and the past, they're not here now. And this present moment, we say, it's not really here either. You can't get a hold of it. It's already past, we say. So it's showing this other aspect. This aspect here of the things coming and going and moving in time and all of this, and there's where we're aging and growing and dying and all of this, that's going on here. But this is going on in this place where at the same time we can see this other aspect. It shows up like now. It's always now. Now, 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 now. It's not, well, it's something other than time. It doesn't behave like time at all. I could do this with energy too. It's a little bit more, I could talk this way about it, but it'd be a little more difficult, I think, than with time. But pretty much everything is like this, and it'll show both aspects of this that we kind of understand now. We've not, yeah, it's always now. It's always here too. Now, this is going to start to relate to energy, but it gets more complicated with other things. But it's always here, it's always now, yeah. But then there seems to be a there, not just here, but there's there, you know. Well, but now like, mathematicians and physicists are starting to say, but no, you know, actually, we can't say there's time, can't say there's space. So what do we have? Again, it's our grasping mind. We want to grasp something there. I got to get an idea about this, a concept. I have to create it into a thing. And then see if I can relate to that in some way, and you know. And then it also becomes very mysterious, because no matter what we do, as long as we keep hanging on to that, you'll never get hold of anything. But we don't have to get hold of anything. We only need to see the full picture of all of this. And then we can always act, not losing sight of the whole. Very simple formula. Okay, we have gone over the hour. I guess I probably should end. Was there another question? No? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.